is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody's doing well here on this Thursday afternoon, where depending on where you are in town, you either got some rain or you got some serious wind.
Yeah.
You may have gotten both.
I got both.
Yeah, you're on the north side of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got lots of thunder, and then, I mean, trees were bending and limbs were flying, and it didn't rain.
Nope.
So that's the way it is.
But it flooded where I was.
Well, I mean, when it's this hot, you expect when it does rain, it's going to rain. It's going to come pretty good. And it did. I mean,
and it's not going to cool anything off, apparently.
No. Well, it cools it off for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's worse.
And then, yeah.
Yeah, then it's worse. It was hot and muggy this morning. And
yeah,
Auburn football went inside.
Yep.
On the day before their first scrimmage.
Smart call.
Yeah, and a day after their first day in pads, they're in shells today, mm-hmm. inside, so they can get some work done and prepare. Because Justin Ferguson, by the way, from the Auburn Observer, is who I'm talking to here. If you can't recognize his voice, you should by now. but I think they're planning on going pretty hard and seeing what they can find out tomorrow. And to do that, They conserved a little bit of energy today.
Yeah, both coaches we talked to today, Tyler Danik from the offensive line and Vontrell King-Williams, the defensive tackle, talked about how big the scrimmage was going to be for their guys specifically, and just finding separation, finding who they can trust, getting closer to coming down with, okay, here's our starting lineup, here's our rotation, here's what we want to do. So you want your guys to be in your best spot that they can be. You still want to work them, and it was still pretty intense practice even inside. A lot of energy, a lot of guys moving around and getting work done, pretty tough. But they want that tomorrow when they go into Jordan-Hare that they can put their best foot forward out there, because by the time they do this next scrimmage next week, you're going to want to kind of have a lot of stuff figured out by then that you can start making the switch. School will be back in session, obviously, next week. You want to start making that switch to looking ahead to kind of an extended prep for Baylor and the rest of the season to come, and not as much camp stuff.
Oh, not as much determining, you know, who are we going to be able to count on, who's going to be in the playing rotation, things like that. A lot of that's going to be determined tomorrow and in the next few days.
Yeah, I know. And that's it's going to be fun to see and kind of hear what you heard. And, and you know, I think pretty much across the board, outside of quarterback, offensive line to an extent, you want to be too deep pretty much everywhere. And then there's some other positions where you could go three deep, or you know, even beyond that. And
I think defensively, it's funny. We're talking about it yesterday with Adam. I mean, he was like, "You remember the depth chart, the first defensive depth chart from last year?" I don't know if Alex Golish is going to be a fan of the or.
He did that at USF, yeah.
Well, they've got that kind of situation, I think, on defense where they're going to be 30 guys.
Yeah.
That they feel like they want to play and they can play without there being a big drop-off.
Yeah, I wouldn't get hung up as much on the depth chart and starters and all that, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's going to be, can you be at least two deep at every position? And the places where you feel like you can go three and be fine, go do it if you can. And I think they've gotten closer to figuring that out. And then on the offensive side, obviously you just want to play one quarterback, you know, for the most part. Offensive line wise, you want to have a starting five and then maybe a sixth or a seventh or an eighth guy ready to go. Kind of have a chain of command, like where, okay, if something happens, here's what you would do next. I think tight end can go deeper than two, and I think running back's going to go deeper than two. But, you know, the wide receiver rotation is going to be pretty much a two deep with some extra. And I think there's like, especially linebacker and all the secondary, you're going to want to play two deep there. Three if you can, but like two is definitely what you're hunting for right now. So tomorrow with this scrimmage, it's going to be a lot of like, okay, let's see what you got. This is real football. This is what it looks like. You got to get Vontrell King-Williams was saying it today, get dudes to the ground. All right. What does it look like when you have to make the play? And it's a big separation spot. So that when next week comes around and school's already back and you're starting to get in a little bit more of a groove and a routine, you're not having to sit here and be like, okay, we got to figure out who our starting X, Y, or Z is or who can be in that rotation. You will have a better idea so that, you know, in a couple of weeks, you are in game prep mode.
I mean, look, they're in the last few days of just it being all football.
Yep.
You know, once Monday gets here, hey, they're classes. They're things that the, you know, times when you can't, they can't be right there in meetings or with other players, with coaches, things like that. So this is the time. And I think they have impressed on the players that, hey, this is it. You've got to show something now. You mentioned it. I've said it all throughout camp. This has been as energetic a preseason camp as I can recall.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gotten after it, and it's been up-tempo, full pace, with guys, I mean, seemingly pretty into it, and when they're not, I really appreciate not just hearing the coaches, but other players, you know, getting after their teammates.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the whole thing. It's like you practice like you play, and if you're Alex Golish, well, how do you want to play? You want to play fast. You want to play energetic on all three sides of the ball, not just his offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, we obviously know the offensive pace is so big, but, like, you want your defense to be as attacking and flying around as your offense is, and I think special teams-wise, they want to be able to show that depth as well and do those kind of same things. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very energetic camp. It's different. I mean, it is different.
It's just,
we'll see how much that translates into wins and losses this year. But I will say, like, it is, if you go to practice or if you've heard anything or seen anything from practice, it is a different level of intensity than we saw these last few years. We'll see how much it plays into what happens on Saturday. But you can definitely tell they want to play with, I mean, what was the word that Alex Golish said? You know, preaching coming into Auburn. I mean, he even had hats that said it when he was at South Florida, edge. Like, that's the word I think about with this team. This is a team that just plays with an edge. And, you know, we'll see how much that really shows up, you know, in a few weeks against Baylor. But, I mean, when you've got drills where, you know, guys are yelling to restart it because they didn't feel like everybody did it correctly, like whole 11 team, when you have drills where assistant coaches are sprinting with the players and doing push-ups whenever there's mistakes and stuff like that, I think you're talking about something, a team that's like embracing the work and the grind, because it's year one, you're wanting to establish a culture, you want to establish that proof of concept. I think everybody knows that on paper this isn't the most talented team in the SEC, but if you can outwork people and you can play with that kind of edge, you might be able to achieve more than what more talented teams have done, including more talented teams that have been at Auburn.
Recently. And I've said that to quite a few folks, especially here over the last few days, that the more I watch this team practice, there's not the top-end talent that Auburn had the last few years. But you know what? I don't think there's any question this is a deeper team.
It's a very deep team.
They have competition that is very close. And it's good enough, I think, to be able to compete in the SEC. It may not be the best talent in the SEC, but it's good enough to compete and be able to win if they play well. But multiple players, as I look at every position on this roster.
Yeah, no, and I think if you're Auburn, you look at, say, in the time span where you have had these losing seasons, you look at some other teams in the SEC that have been more consistently successful than you and say, well, they didn't have the talent that we had. But what did they do? And I think it's, you know, I think of Vanderbilt the last couple of seasons, and I think of an identity, and I think of a way of playing where it was, you're going to play clean, smart, tough football, and it's going to be something that really stands out. And then the other one that keeps jumping to mind for me that I don't think people, you know, think about it as much, but, like, go back and look over, like, last 3 or 4 years, how many wins Missouri has. And they have a few over Auburn.
Missouri seems –
They're consistently a good football team.
Yeah, I mean, they average better than 9.
Yeah, and what does Missouri do? They play fast, but they run the ball downhill. They play physical. They're a line of scrimmage team.
Generally don't beat themselves.
Yeah, they're a good line of scrimmage team, well-coached team. And so it's like for Auburn, it's, yes, you want to recruit really well. And look, this staff has recruited really well. But, you know, that top 10 class in 27 ain't going to help you out right now. What's going to help you out right now is how you, like, make the most of what you got. And so I think this is a – I mean, this is a – This is a team that is playing with an edge, that is practicing with an edge. There is an energy, there is an intensity, and I think it all stems from. I think a lot goes back to Golish and just how he is, how the communicator and the leader and the coach he is. But I think there is a top-down approach with this roster where you might not have as many guys who are big-name recruits coming out. You know, you still have some, but not as many big-name recruits coming out of high school. But what you do have, much like your head coach, you have guys that want to say, we belong here, and I'm ready to show everybody that I can do this here in the SEC against the best of the best. Every position group's got guys like that. And I think there's all over the coaching staff, you have that kind of mindset and that mentality. And that's the type of stuff that I think when Auburn has had really successful football teams with really successful football coaches early in their tenures, Pat Dye, I think Malzahn had some of that to him with Chizik early on as well. It's like you look at it and say, okay, what did you have? And it is just, we're going to outwork you. We're going to have that edge and, that's how we're going to build that foundation. And I see a lot of that with this Golish team of like, you're being made of the right stuff. It's not going out and renting a bunch of, transfers, big name guys that they're not going to be around, and it's all about the flash and the star power and all that. No, this is different. This is a different foundation.
Yeah, you're not going out and leasing the most expensive automobile that there is, but you're trying to find one that will get you the distance without, having to go into the shop.
And hold value.
And
that you can upgrade and you can build on.
That is right.
And I think that's the thing that, the last couple of years, especially for Auburn, we saw recruiting alone is not going to save you. Buzz is not going to save you. What had happened in the past is not going to save you. What's going to be the difference now? It's just, hey, this is a team that is fighting. This is a team that's working hard because they have no other choice to. Because if you're not, if you're slacking, or if you're not up to that level, there's going to be somebody either in your room or going up against you that is going to remind you very quickly, what they're going for, right? Like there's a bunch of different hungry guys, really willing to compete and ready to show that they belong here at this level, and they feel like they can win games and turn heads here. And you combine the fact that it is a fast practice, it is an intense practice, it's a physical practice, and it's 7 million degrees outside. You have no other choice, because if you don't, you're going to suffer. Like, literally, you're going to suffer out there.
Absolutely. Something that would be really – I was just thinking about this, and here, I'll sort of offer this one up as an idea to look at some point during the season, if you haven't already done so. I was thinking about this as you're talking about the attitudes, the hunger that you're seeing from so many players. You look at and Auburn, brought in, I think, 39 transfers.
It's like 50-something new players.
Yeah,
like
it was right at 60.
Yeah, I think 60. It's 60. Yeah, yeah.
It was 60 because it was like 39 and 21.
It's crazy.
And 21 signees, so 60 new players. But those players, for the most part, weren't the biggest names, weren't guys that had been five stars out of high school. Not saying that none of them were highly touted, because some of them were.
Some of them were
But a lot of them were not, were players that, in addition to the guys from USF, I mean, you got some players that came in from smaller schools that, as you said, want to prove that they can do it here. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really cool to look at where all these guys came from as we get into the season and you see how they're contributing, because there are going to be some of these guys that are going to be very important contributors to this team.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talked about heading into the fall was there are going to be some guys that you may not have noticed this spring that are stepping up now. And I think today was a great example of that. We had offensive and defensive linemen today, and two of the guys we got a chance to talk to weren't mentioned much this spring and heading into the fall. I'm talking about Jacob Strand on offense and Buddy Mathis on defense.
Yeah.
Walter Mathis was highly touted.
He was
a big-time recruit. He's not one of those nobody knew anything about him. But Jacob Strand, on the other hand, is not a guy that everybody went, oh, wow, you got him when you're bringing him in. And he may start for Auburn at guard.
Yeah, he might be your starting left guard. Yeah, he was a guy that didn't play a ton last season at Oregon State, and not very, quite frankly, a terrible football team because of injuries. Mm-hmm. And yet what they saw on film and what they saw scouting him was like, okay, we need to pull the trigger on this guy and see what he does because he's experienced. He's got really good technique, and he's a swing guy. He can play tackle. He can play guard. You know, and now it's gotten to a point where he's played so well here in fall camp where, okay, he might be your left guard.
You know? Yeah, he started off the spring, you know, as the backup at right tackle, working at right tackle behind Stanton Ramil. Now he's pushing.
He started camp as the backup at left tackle.
Yeah.
And now he's at left guard. So it's just like that's very, very valuable to have. Even if Derek Plaz is a guy that ends up mm-hmm. starting there, it's going to be so valuable to have a guy like Jacob Strand. And he's done a really good job. Between him and Cole Skinner looking like he's done so far in fall camp, I think that's a – you know, that those guard spots are still up for grabs, but like
there are a lot of options there.
Those are two guys where you're like, okay, like wasn't talking about them as much in the spring, weren't talking about them as much in the spring, but now it's like, okay, these guys could end up starting for you against Baylor. It's really, really good signs of their progress, and it just shows you that, like, yeah, just you get that opportunity and the door's open, who's going to go grab it? And those two guys have done a really good job of it.
Yeah, and Jacob's a guy that, you know, Alex Golish was talking about how intelligent he was and how many hours he had to take. And just talking to him today, you can see, yes, he's a guy that that understands and he was saying, you know, he's not a guy that has run up-tempo before, but he seems to really be embracing it. And his teammates all talk about how quickly he picks things up, and that's really important as well. I mean, obviously, you have to have talent to play, but offensive line's a lot more cerebral than some folks would realize.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, you got to be, especially in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Skinner was talking about that today. It was just like you got to be on the ball, because if you're thinking about what went wrong on this last play or getting in like in between. No, we're already down and we're already snapping, so you got to be on it. So it is definitely something where, Danik said it today after practice. He said, I'm going to find the guys who are the toughest and the smartest, and they're going to play for me. I don't care who you were or where you came from or, you know, how big you are necessarily. It's going to be you're tough enough and you're smart enough to play on this offensive line because you got to have it. You got to have it.
Yep. So, I mean, it appears that right now on the offensive line, you know who your tackles and your center are and their battles there at the guard. But as Hoodie said today, I mean, there's at least a half dozen guys battling for playing time.
Yeah, no, it's a good spot to have it. And I think you love the fact, if you're Auburn, that Joe Simmons has just been able to just have a death grip on that left tackle job. Stanton Ramil didn't go fully today.
I think that's sort of a precaution.
And that's what they talked about it afterwards. It's like, hey, you're just going to be smart. Get him to the season, you know. Is it as important that he goes 100 million% every single practice in the fall, or does it matter more that he's 100% by the time?
Because you know
how good of a player he is.
Yeah, right? I'd love to have him 100% for the scrimmage tomorrow. I mean, see what he can do, and then let's
at tackle for sure. But even maybe across the whole offensive line, he might be the most proven offensive lineman in the room.
Right,
especially at the power conference level. So, you know. It's not as much. It's kind of like what they're doing with Sly Smith right now,
mm-hmm.
where it's just, you know, he said it earlier this week. It's like, I don't have to hit in camp. Everybody knows I can hit. And it's like, yeah,
but
that's
he's out
true.
There going through every drill.
Right. It's more important to be like, let's get you at 100% mm-hmm. because we know you can play. Just be healthy. Don't lose, you know, don't get sidelined. Still get out here. Still do as much as you can. Get those mental reps, especially, but like we don't need to put you in harm's way. And so I think there's some people right now that are looking at Auburn when we do these, you know, like the Observer, when we do these breakdowns of these injury reports, and they're mm-hmm. like, man, that's a lot. And it's like, okay, none of them are serious right now outside of a couple of guys. And what you mostly think is like, it's all about just getting them to the season because it's hard. I mean, that's the other thing is like, these practices go pretty tough. So, you know, if you have anything kind of nagging you right now, like, you're probably better off taking a couple days or getting it and then getting back to it. I think about, you know, last week, you know, a guy who's probably going to end up playing, you know, a ton, you know, for this defense, you know, at the defense tackle spot. Why am I blanking on his name all of a sudden? Oh my goodness.
What position?
Defense tackle. Arkansas State kid.
Cody Sigler.
Cody Sigler, yeah. I had C in my head.
I was thinking that's who you're talking about. But
Cody Sigler has a thigh injury over the weekend mm-hmm. and misses a practice or two, isn't 100%. So he's working with the second team and the third team, and people are like, what's going on? It's like, no, you played safe with that guy because I will tell you, You talk to anybody about Cody Sigler, you watch any drill with Cody Sigler, it's like, that's your guy. That's your leader right there.
The good thing is it's giving opportunities to guys like Buddy Mathis to work
Darian
with
Smith.
The first unit. Yes.
Darian Smith working with the first team. A lot of good stuff about Darian Smith today. And he was so impressive last season, really.
Yes,
quickly.
He was. The burst that he has.
Yeah, and then Malik Autry's out of that club right now, and they like what he's progressing. Jordan Crawford has had a good week of practice. So that's definitely something where, you know, open up those opportunities, right? I think about, yesterday where, and I'm sure you're talking about playing, the touchdown from Brown
to Koger.
Beautiful ball, great play, great touchdown. What was awesome?
Good coverage.
And it was your third guy, third or fourth corner. Like, and so it's like, give them some opportunities, see what they're going to, you know, like, and you saw it again today with the first team. Like, you know, Rayshon Pleasant and Andre Jordan are going to be your guys. Who's going to be that third and fourth guy? And just how do you get better? Well, all right, here's one of our best receivers, and you got to cover him one-on-one. Yeah. Good luck. And he went up and got it. And, yeah, you know, Koger won that rep, and it was a pretty big one. But you're not going to sit there and say, you know, although some people have, where it's like, oh, man, you know, they gave up a third and long. Well, yeah, no, they got a 70-yard touchdown. It was a good play. You'll take that. And I think if you're Auburn, you know, it's one of those things. Like, we'll hear from the scrimmage tomorrow. And it'll be like, no one will be happy.
Everything can't be good.
Yeah.
The offense and defense can't
I would love
win.
For someone to tell me what a perfect scrimmage would look like.
Right.
In terms of give me this many yards, this many points, this many turnovers, and that was you would say that's acceptable. Because I think everybody would have a different opinion,
no.
but it's like
depends on whether you're an offensive.
If the defense goes out
guy.
There and just absolutely annihilates them and just gets in the backfield, well, man, this offense is really rough. On the flip side, if the offense moves the ball, puts up a lot of points. It's like there's no happy medium there. But I think in the case of what that touchdown was, it was like, hey, you put Blake Woodby in that situation, and look, Koger won that one and won it pretty big. But what did you do? You got to see what he looked like against the first team offense with the first team defense, and that's more valuable than saying, "Hey, the guy we know you're going to start, be out there and do everything all the time." Like you want to, if you want to play deep and you want to talk about rotating and showcasing your depth, you know, you got to put your money where your mouth is sometime, and they did that in some of these drills.
All right, we're just underway here on the Thursday drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew's at the controls. Love for you to join in. I'm sure you've got some questions, comments. As Auburn gets ready for its first scrimmage tomorrow morning, we'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. We're back with more of the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle. Live. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio, and Drew is at the controls. We'll get back to football, and there's plenty more for us to talk about and discuss. Again, we'd love to hear from you, anything you want to talk about sports-wise. But let's talk a little basketball, Ferg. I mean, I go on with Wimp Sanderson and his son on Wednesdays, and they're like – how good was that team that Auburn played in Greece? And is it a concern that they lost the second game? And I said,
yeah, if you don't have any context.
Not that – I said, they're not great, but no. I don't think there's much concern.
They played pretty much the entire second half without six of their top eight players.
Right.
And they still had a chance to win. I think you're all right.
At the buzzer, yep.
Yeah, I think you're all right there. The fact that they were down four guys and won by 20 plus and put nearly 100 up on them is a really good sign.
Yeah, I mean, they're up more than 25 going to the fourth quarter when they only scored 12 in the first game.
And you want to be careful out there, and you don't want to risk anything with injury. That's why they pulled Tahad early in that second game. KO didn't play much in the second half. Yeah, obviously didn't play any with Owen Freeman and George Kimball. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I think Stephen Pearl said it best after the first game. It's August. Like you don't want to get any more complicated than that. It is literally just August. Like
he seemed pleased that they faced a physical brand of basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of funny. There was some talk about that where it was like, man, those guys were playing pretty rough, and I just wanted to be like, yeah, you played an Eastern European basketball team.
That's right.
Kind of the way they roll. But it was a good test for those guys. And I think that's the thing is, like, when they were closer to full strength, they played a really good game on both ends of the floor. That team's not overly talented. You know, last year they sent their entire starting five to play, mm-hmm. you know, high major ball. And you can make the argument that Filip Jovic was probably the best out of those guys here in the States. So, yeah, not like they're putting out a ton of NBA guys on that team. But they're pretty well drilled. They run good stuff. They're very, you know, it's a very fundamental and technique sound team, as you would normally expect. So for Auburn to go in there, play well on both ends of the floor in that first game. And then just really, I think that second game, you know, missing six out of your seven or eight best players, just the fight that they showed and to hang in there. They were down by like double digits at one point, and they kept clawing back and clawing back. Like, that's what you want to see. And there's some guys in there who probably aren't going to play super heavy minutes this year who had to just to get them through that game. And so I think it was a good test, and seems like the team had a good time out there too. And a lot of the bonding, a lot of the chemistry stuff that we talk about with the football team, what they're doing with their camp, obviously getting to do that in Greece was a big thing. As I said, that's your main goal when you go out there. And then the basketball becomes, you don't want to say it's secondary, but the basketball becomes, okay, let's try some things out and see some things and know it's not the end of the world, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple of things. Obviously, Thomas Dowd is a rebounding machine.
Yeah.
I
hope y'all were listening early about that. Like, yeah. It's insane. He's one of the best returning rebounders in college basketball. And ever since he got to Auburn, he's just showing that he's gonna keep on doing it. And it's very, very impressive what he does, you know, getting the ball.
No doubt about it. And Buki seemed to respond. Steven seemed pleased with his effort there in the second game.
Yeah, and you know, he had like 10 blocks across both of those games. So, you know, I thought that first game, when you looked at the numbers on the defensive end and you saw didn't give up a lot of threes, which is obviously their big problem last mm-hmm. year. Good number of block shots, dominated the glass. It's like those are some things that you wanted to see because, again, you wouldn't think Mega Basket would be overly talented on the offensive end, but they really know what they're doing on that end. They run good. So it was very similar to like when you play a mid-major or a, you know, small conference team where it's just like, yeah, they don't have high level talent like
we
do.
They've got guys that have been playing together for a while too,
got a system that you really, really, you know, it's tough to cover at times. So thought they did a really good job of that. But yeah, Dowd, super impressive.
Adam Olson continued to show that he can shoot.
I'm telling you, man, like just having watched him throughout the summer, and, you know, I'll just say it. I mean, if he gets his feet set and it's a clean look, it's, you know, more often than not, it's going down. He is really, really impressive. You had KO get off to a really good start in him. Mm-hmm. Second game, he didn't shoot as well, but it was like that was the second game was the first time, like, since like January the 3rd.
That he didn't shoot it well.
Thought Tahad did a really good job playing point guard. Really good assist turnover numbers out there that you like to see. Good assist rate. And then I particularly think, like, one of the things that stood out to me from that is Caleb Williams going out there and having to start, you know, mm-hmm. at the three and you know, in that first game and play well. Just does some of everything. I think he's going to be a good – if he can fight into the rotation as a true freshman, he's just one of those guys where it's like he's got good size, throw him out there. If he can hold his own on defense, he can rebound, he can shoot, he can drive, he can assist for you. Like he can do some of everything, and that's a good kind of connective piece to have on your team. And looks like he's had a really impressive summer and continues to be a guy that I think, like, went in being like, all right, we'll see. It's tough to – in this day and age, to be not a highly, like, unless you're like a five-star freshman, it's hard to get into a rotation with an old team. You know, I would say right now he's definitely going to be in the mix for some playing time. So mm-hmm. yeah, he had a really good trip out there.
What is your take, your thought, or timeline with Montas and Narcisse? Got any idea?
No idea, because this is not
just NCAA.
This is not an Auburn thing. This is not an Auburn thing. This is an NCAA
thing. No,
it's
a nationwide thing with international players.
And they're just all waiting. And so it has kind of been the mode that everyone's going with right now is that they're resting those guys. I mean, the big one being the Arkansas kid, the Finnish player that came over. He's like supposed to be like a lottery pick in the NBA draft. He did not get to play in their Bahamas tour, and like that was a big deal. And mm-hmm. so, I know when that happened, people freaked out. They have been practicing all year, or I guess all summer since they've gotten here. there's nothing from Auburn's side that I've heard or seen that been like they're doubtful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just until those boxes get checked, you know, they're playing it safe or they're being more careful. And I think you also want to be like in that situation, like, what if they're not able to play? Or what if they're not able to play all the time? What if they're not, like, what if this drags on a little bit? You know, at least have some experience of, okay, this is what it looks like when we don't have them. And I will say, if Auburn was not able to have Montas or Narcisse this season, you're in trouble. Like, is it? But guess what?
Man,
like,
there's some
pretty
there's
much
some
everybody
teams.
Else in college basketball is in trouble.
There's some teams that
might not be able to field a team.
Trouble.
Yeah. Like, so I don't think it's going to be anything crazy. You've got some months, and again, like Auburn is
it's not like
nothing
we're
new
2 weeks
changed.
Away from the start of the season
really. And that's the other thing too, is just like it's not like anything new's come up. Mm-hmm. Right, they signed them, they brought them over, they've been practicing. It's just kind of what all these teams that are going on these foreign tours are doing right now, where they're just like, all right, we're not playing these guys until they get cleared. That's just the way they decided to go about it. I would not be surprised if they were encouraged to do that by higher up somewhere, whether it's the NCAA mm-hmm. or the SEC or something like that. Just be like, hey, you just like this is probably your best course to do that. So I wouldn't panic if I were I was Auburn fan. I wouldn't panic about anything with the injury front either, because again, it's August. The stuff will play itself out over the next couple months.
Yeah, that's the way it should. So yeah, just sort of. Let's wait and see. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
1-390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive, Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Before we continue, talk a little bit about what all you've got for folks there at the Observer, and I mean as we head into tomorrow and the first scrimmage of the fall.
Yeah. So this
fall.
Afternoon.
It didn't fall.
Yeah. No.
I'm sorry.
Fall camp. The real feel today was 110 when I was outside. Yeah, so this afternoon and yesterday, we put up what we've been doing whenever we get these media availabilities, these ones where we get, you know, viewing windows and interviews. We've been doing observations where, like, I put everything I get. And mm-hmm. just all the stuff from the interviews, all the stuff from the viewing window, just a one-stop thing. You can click on it, read everything we got from there, and, you know, full breakdown. So I think the one today was, like, over 3,000 words. It was a lot of good stuff in there. So auburnobserver.com, you can sign up there, check it out. It's a great time to sign up. And then tomorrow when we get the interview from, you know, the press conference with Alex Golish after the scrimmage, I'll have a write-up on what we got from the scrimmage, what we heard about the scrimmage. So got all that going on, had a podcast come out today, did some stuff earlier in the week where we talked about the running back and wide receiver rotations, kind of the battles there, talked about the safety rotation earlier this week, just kind of breaking down kind of piece by piece some of this roster at this point in fall camp. So it's a ton of fall camp stuff. Did a little basketball over the weekend too. So auburnobserver.com, sign up there. $70 for a year of the Observer, or you can pay $7 a month. So if you buy the yearly subscription up front, you'll get basically 2 months free in that. So and then everything we do gets emailed to you. So if you were an Observer subscriber at about 2:15 this afternoon, you got, you know, 3,000 words in your inbox all about what we got today from football practice. So yeah, that's what we're getting so much access, and we're able to kind of get, you know, this kind of good rhythm where, like, in years past,
I love getting players who play the position that the coach we're talking to,
and then you get those viewing windows, or you talk about the scrimmages and stuff like that. And it's like, and in years past in fall camp, you know, before I was doing this at the Observer, or before I was doing the style we've done the last couple of years, where it's just like, I would like feel like, oh, I need to save this or save that. And like now it's just like, we're getting so much stuff. It's like, no, like here's what I got. Like here. And I don't want you to have to, you know, click on a bunch of different stories or, you know, that if you're subscribed to the server, you get it and you're going to get all of it in one shot. So like today, there's a three deep in there of the defense.
We got really good looks at the defense today.
Full injury report. I spent two periods just watching Byron Brown and the quarterbacks. Broke that down, kind of some really fun stuff they were doing in the red zone. And you can talk about a whole lot of stuff from the offensive line and defensive line interviews mm-hmm. and talking to those guys. So it's a ton. It's a ton of information. So if you want to know everything that's going on with fall camp right now, go to the Observer and check it out.
I was just thinking, who haven't we gotten yet? We haven't gotten Coleman
haven't gotten edge rushers, tight ends, and the other linebackers coach and corners.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's right. Yep. So there's four assistants left that we haven't gotten. Yep. And tomorrow, folks, it'll be sometime in the afternoon because we just got word that the scrimmage is expected to last till around noon.
Yeah, there's
a long scrimmage.
So they're like, how hot can we make this?
It's hotter tomorrow than it's supposed to be hotter tomorrow than it was today.
Yeah, it's like, how hot can we make this? So I'll give you a credit too. I mean, like, Alex Golish, if Spring's like any indication, man, he will go in there and tell you what happened. Like, yep. he ain't hiding. It's
yeah,
not
I think
the,
you ask him, he'll pretty much tell you.
Yeah, and so we'll get a lot of information out of that, and so that'll be looking forward to that tomorrow. And, you know, obviously when they go to Jordan-Hare and it's, you know, it'll be 22 days out from the start of the season, it's just, you know, people are moving back in. It feels like every student moved back in today if you've been driving around.
Every student was
good
driving around
Lord,
somewhere today.
Man, it was
– traffic was ridiculous.
It's crazy. And so, you know, it's just you're getting closer and closer to like, hey, it don't feel like football weather, and it's not going to feel like football weather for a while.
Well, it's going to feel like football weather in the deep south. Yeah. But, I mean,
the fact that high school starts next week is
crazy. Isn't Georgia starting this week?
Yeah.
I think.
Corky Kell's going on right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. But, yeah, a lot of stuff at the Observer. And, like, so tomorrow when we get scrimmage, we'll have a newsletter from that. We'll talk about it over the weekend on the podcast and then roll right into next week. They will be off on Monday from practice because it's the first day of class.
It's also the first day back from Grand National.
Yeah. I mean, it's I'll be interested to hear kind of what, like, long term, what the effects of that were.
I can't think of anything negative.
No,
about
not
it
at
all.
No.
I mean, you know, some people.
Did you
have
catch
sort of,
the thing yesterday about the running backs going fishing?
Yeah,
that's an interesting.
Yeah,
each other how to fillet fish,
which
I don't even know.
Larry Porter talking about them going fishing, and that some are teaching some how to fish, others teaching them how to fillet the fish, others are teaching them how to fry, cook the fish, and then they're learning how to cook other things. And
that's cool. Like, I mean,
was it Omar that said they're a pack?
Yeah,
they travel. They travel.
And that's a group. And that's a group. When you watch them after practices and during practices, they are doing everything. And like when guys are getting extra work after practice, it is everybody out there.
I mean,
and even guys like a guy like Nakai Davenport, who's not 100%, is still out there trying to do as much as he can. And I think that's the mindset you got to have with that running back room because they're going to want to play deep and they're going to rotate and it is going to. I mean,
You're going to get somebody banged up, especially. I mean, look, as fast as they play, somebody's going to get banged up and you got to have somebody else ready right now.
Right. Yeah. And so it's a good that group. I think in particular, I think has benefited a lot because it's a lot of new guys. You know, Jeremiah and Omar and Alvin were here last year, but then it's like you look up and you got three other guys who were not here. Who are going to play roles in this offense?
Good to hear some talk about Bryson Washington because we were wondering he misses one day and it happened to be one day we're out there watching so you wonder.
And I heard that had nothing to do with the injury.
But obviously at the time you wondered it was an injury. If it's not injury, then you think, oh, is there something bad? No, no, he's out there working and apparently.
He's had a good week.
Yeah, apparently has really come on here the last few days as they go into full pass.
He's an impressive running back. I mean, it's just a matter of just getting to full speed. And even if he's not run for 1,000 yards, what he was like Baylor running back, Bryson Washington, like when he was healthy there, he's still going to provide value for your team because he's a good player, really, really good player. It's just so hard. You know, you don't want to like look at other guys and kind of miss because I like a healthy Davenport a lot in this offense. I think Tay Meadows getting some reps is a good sign, but it's just so hard not to just be like Omar, like to the point where Jeremiah Cobb just kind of understood, right?
Yeah,
it's just
right.
You know, I had somebody the other day. I saw they were through like, why haven't we heard anything about Jeremiah Cobb early? Why haven't we heard anything about Keyshawn Singleton? I'll tell you what, they're first in line every rep, and like that's where you're gonna go,
They're the guy, and there's no question about it. It's like you haven't heard as much. You hear more about Byram because people are watching the quarterback, and they want to see every throw that he makes and know everything that he
does. I've talked more about Elijah Melendez than I've talked about Xavier Atkins this fall camp. Doesn't mean anything about Xavier Atkins. It's just you know, you're seeing some other guys kind of step up there.
How about Juice Diaz at the
nickel?
At the nickel today?
So they did that. That was the second wave and the third wave. Mm-hmm. And we had heard last week Durkin talk about, hey, there might be some times where you get three linebackers on the field trying to mix it up and do different things. Diaz is definitely a guy that I think could cover in space.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, have that kind of versatility. Oh, and then your third unit was Tootle. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's a guy
that's
who
a
can,
big, that's, yeah,
can
that,
move
that,
and run.
That's a big nickel. Yeah, you're not kidding.
So it's fun. I think that group's pretty fun. The times where they're going to, like, try to get three linebackers on the field at the same time without necessarily sacrificing their coverage ability and their you know, ability to move, there's going to be times where they do three corners at the same time.
Right.
And then, I mean, depending on whatever you call Champ Anthony, you might have four corners out there at the same time. So, yeah, it's experimental. Like, it's mix and match. And one of the things I put in the observations today that stood out to me, where you talk about, like, the nickels, like, you know, big nickels and moving around like that. When we were walking off the field today, the edges were with Coleman Hutzler, and they were working on dropping back in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, playing out in space and cutting and moving and stuff like that. And it's just DJ Durkin, especially in year three, wants a defense where it's like, if you get on the field, especially in those second and third levels.
Oh, he loves to be able to use guys doing things that you don't normally expect.
I mean, if you're a defensive tackle, you're probably going to do just one thing, like, or you know, you're going to do your defensive tackle jobs. But, like, if you play end, if you play linebacker, if you play anywhere in the secondary.
Yeah, you could be blitzing, you could be dropping, you could be, yeah.
You got to be able to do that, and that's where it gets fun, because then you make that quarterback think, you mm-hmm. you make that offensive line kind of think.
What did Cody say about DJ's defense? That it's madness?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's just, it is. It is a defense that is designed to really give you a lot of problems and make you think, and I think, and again, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but one of the things we've been talking about here the early part of the season is that Auburn's first three SEC games are going to be against three brand-new quarterbacks. You look at Aaron Filo at Florida. You look at whatever Vanderbilt's going to end up doing. Mm-hmm. If it's not Jared Curtis, it's going to be the other guy. Could it be, you know, Brandon Vison or Faison Brandon? I keep doing that. Faison Brandon or George McIntyre at Tennessee. All three of those are going to be brand-new guys pretty much to this kind of role. And we've talked about it through the lens of, oh, well, Auburn could have a quarterback advantage there because of Byron Brown, his experience. The other thing is that you're going to play some young quarterbacks, and, like, that is like DJ Durkin, like, sharpening the knives, like, and getting ready to try to confuse and get after these dudes. And I think that's been an underrated thing that we haven't talked about as much with this early part of the schedule. Not only do I think you could have an edge at quarterback, I think you could also create some havoc with your defense if you're locked in and, you know, guys are playing well early in the season.
I think it also has been a huge benefit for Byron Brown.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the South, especially the South Florida guys going against that defense, because
it's different.
You're going to face quality defenses almost all the time in the SEC.
And hear me say that, you know, Byron Brown and this USF offense, these guys on this USF played well against Florida last season and won. Played, I think the defense really was the issue against Miami. I mean, Miami mm-hmm. just kind of did whatever they wanted on that side of the ball. But, like, they had some good moments, some good plays against Miami. There's some good teams in the American. Obviously, they didn't play Tulane, but Tulane had a really good year, obviously. James Madison was the Sun Belt. You know, some other teams that were in the mix, you know, to be playoff teams out of the AAC. So hear me say, they played some good teams. However, there's a good chunk of that USF schedule last year where it's like, you ain't playing Charlotte. Like,
no.
this ain't UAB, this ain't Charlotte, this ain't even like a North Texas defense last season. And North Texas was a really good team. It's the SEC. And so it's like, this is getting you ready for, you know, like, I watch, there's the Charlotte and UAB and Rice are the games last season where you go back and watch USF do it, and it's like, oh, they got that defense. Just, they're trying to survive. Like, they're just trying not to die every play and give up a touchdown. And so, but going up against the DJ Durkin defense in practice, like, that's more what you're going to get. More what you're going to get week in and week out.
And that's one of the things that, you know, we were thinking in the spring, but I feel even more sure about it now, that it's one of the reasons why the offense wasn't as exciting as some people were disappointed, going, because why isn't the offense doing more? Well, DJ Durkin's not holding anything back, and Alex Golish doesn't want him to. I mean, he wants to see how Byron Brown and these guys respond, and it has helped them. Byron said so himself. He feels like he's reacting quicker now because he's had to go against what DJ's throwing at him, and that's just going to help as he gets into conference play. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in.
The Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final minute or so here of hour number one. We've got another hour to go, though. Love for you to join in, Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We're looking up at the FedEx St. Jude there in Memphis, where Jackson Koivin today with a one over, which is it's going to be tough for him to continue. I mean, coming in at number 70, playing by himself first thing this morning, shooting that one over, and he's looks like he's got to finish around top 10 to be able to advance to the cut of 50.
Yeah, you just need to make the weekend, you know, first and foremost, and then see where you get on Saturday. But, you know, really remarkable that he got into this spot in the first place.
Oh, no kidding. And in his few pro tourneys as he has.
It's going to be really fun to kind of keep watching that moving forward for him.
All right, music's playing. That means we are halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Another hour to go, and we're wide open, so come on in and join us. 334-321-1390, hour number two of the Thursday Drive is coming up.
The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew is at the controls. We'd love to hear from you as we are into week two of Auburn preseason football practice. The pads went on yesterday. First scrimmage will be tomorrow over at the stadium. No, it's not open. We'll talk to Coach Alex Golish following the scrimmage, probably early tomorrow afternoon, because we get word the scrimmage expected to last till noon. It has been, I was asked this on a show, well, Monday and another one yesterday, Ferg. When I was talking about the tempo and so on, so it's like, I guess people, again, maybe because of the Joe Goodman comments or things like that, thinking, well, because Auburn's staying at Grand National, has it been a pretty relaxed fall practice? And it's like, no, this has been about as energetic. And I mean, from the players and coaches, it's not just the tempo and that they're forcing the tempo.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. There's been more energy daily with this, and it's been a bit of a surprise. I'm used to, after about a week of practice, seeing some guys dragging and coaches really having to get after them, and I have not noticed that.
Yeah, my thing is that this must be the most boring camp so far at Alabama, that if, like, this is, like, the fact that Auburn's at the hotel is, like, I've seen five different columns
about
it. And you mentioned the Goodman one, and I'll just say this, that was like Olympic level, like misrepresenting the point.
Oh yes.
like that was willful. Like, yep, nope, this is, they're being soft and pampered. It's like, no, the whole reason they're at the hotel is because that's the only place big enough to hold everybody.
They need everybody in the same place. And look, they're only they're only there for a few hours at night.
Yes.
I mean, they're getting up early. Yeah. And going to the complex and staying there until late and then going back. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like they're there in the mid-afternoon, you know, kicking back at the pool,
nope,
you know, drinking, you know, umbrella drinks.
No, it's definitely something that, you know, you can't put everybody in the dorms because people are moving back in and you don't have enough room. And it's just like, no, you just need to go. Where do you stay before every home game? Well, go there.
Yeah.
And like, and it just so happens to be a resort hotel, but, like, you know, no disrespect, no shade. I do like Grand National. Stayed there a couple times. No disrespect, no shade. It's in Opelika. It ain't like, I think there was a reaction to it. It's like, well, they're staying at a resort. And it's like,
Yeah, in Opelika, like, you know, it's not like they're at the, you know, at, you know, on Hilton Head or something. Like, no, this is a completely
in Atlantis.
Yeah, no, very different. Now, the basketball team stayed at a resort.
Yeah, that's
Greece.
Right. Like, yeah, they're in Mykonos. It's
they got that experience, and you know, we'll have a column about that too at some point, I'm sure. But that it's just like it's about getting everybody in the same spot.
Well,
and
it's keeping everybody together, and this is a 2 week team,
bonding,
whatever. I mean, it is everything.
Anything you don't do outside of football,
Everything as a team for 2 weeks.
And
hey, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio State's doing the same thing.
Oh yeah,
I have a
lot of people. This is an NFL teams do it all the time.
I haven't seen people, you know, just losing their minds about that.
Yeah, it's the NFL thing. I mean, Hard Knocks was like a whole industry of like, oh, covering people at camp. Like, yeah, no, I thought it was a good idea, and I think you're seeing some positive benefits from it already.
I'm telling you, Don Dunn thought it was one of the brilliant things.
Oh, you know, I did the show with Coach Dunn last week, and it was like he just kept going on and on about it, and like that's. You know, that's a good stamp of approval when you've got a pretty old school football coach being like, that's what it's all about.
Well,
like,
when you're trying to build – look, you're trying to build a team.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what – I mean, what – and one of the things we've talked about at different times is, you know, Alex Golish, yes, he has a plan that he knows what he wants, where he wants to get to, how he wants to get there on a daily basis. And part of it is building a team for this year and the future.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not, you know,
it's not a pack of mercenaries.
Well, the thing is, here for the past few years, I felt like we're building for the future. Or what we're being sold is we're building for the future.
Mm-hmm. Wait till I get here.
But it always seemed like that carrot wasn't getting any closer. Yeah. It was still out there, and we still got to wait another year or two. Alex Golish, I feel, you know, he's doing everything he can to
be competitive right away.
Be as good as you can right now without sacrificing the future, but without forfeiting the present to try to build for the future.
Correct. It's a good balance to have, and I think that's part of it is what you do is you go in and you try to import as much as what you did at the last place to make it successful. Coaches, players, scheme, setup, approach, staffers, all of it. Like, you try to do that, and obviously the ultimate example of that is what Kurt Cignetti did, taking in the JMU team to Indiana. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's like you look around college football, there's a handful of teams that are doing the exact same thing. Oklahoma State's doing it with North Texas. UCLA's doing it with James Madison. Auburn's doing it with USF. Penn State's doing it with Iowa State.
Right.
I saw a stat today.
Look at Vandy the last couple of
years.
Iowa State
this season, do you know how many starts they return on the offensive side of the ball? Starts.
From their own?
Yes. How many starts? How many starts do they return from
Iowa State?
Career starts.
I'd say less than 40.
Four, not starters. Four starts. They took that whole team with them to Penn State, and so it's like that's becoming a popular thing. Why not go out there and do it?
Sure. Now that you can, now that players can leave at any time.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so you get
that tells that, you know what that does? That tells me an awful lot of what those players think about their coach
and
his plan.
And that's something that you talk to any of these USF guys, they believe in what.
Oh, they're bought in.
They are bought in all the way. And I think the guys that were inherited here and the guys that came in here who weren't part of this USF team last year, it's like they've bought into it as well. And I think that's, you know, again, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, I'm not for coach worship or anything like that. I feel like that happens way too much with me anyway. But I will say this for Alex Golish, and we'll see how he does on Saturdays. But if you talk to Alex Golish, if you listen to Alex Golish, if you watch him at a practice, you can quickly see, oh, I can see why people buy into that. Like, there is a sense of realism. There's a sense of it's easy to buy into that. Like, you can see, okay, there's a – not saying it's going to be perfect, not saying he's got all the answers, not saying he's God's gift to coaching, but it's just like you hear him talk and you see how he runs, and it's like, okay, I can see why people are buying into it. And that's hard. Like, you know, not everybody's going to buy into it. We saw a coach two coaches ago at Auburn came in, tried to do everything his own way, and not everybody bought into it.
Right.
And it was very obvious that it was tough for that to buy into. And it was just, you know, and I think where with Freeze, it was buying into a vision that never quite got there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one is kind of different because, like you said, it is not wait till all my players get here. It's no, let's win right now. But let's also know that
we've got nothing but a bunch of 1 year guys, and we're going to have to do it all again next year.
This is about establishing a proof of concept. I was on a serious show yesterday, and one of the questions I got was like,
not SE, right?
Yes. Okay.
This isn't a serious show.
Yeah,
no, we have
Sirius
a lot of fun.
SiriusXM. and I was asked, what would you say success would be for Auburn? And I'm like, I've said it a bunch here that people have heard it a ton that are Auburn folks, but like I feel like people outside need to understand. It's like, what's success for Auburn? Win more games than you lose. And that's doable, but it's like win more games than you lose, but don't do it and build something. Like have something where it's like, okay, Auburn had a winning season and look at what they built.
Right. Need to just be 7-5 with 5 blowout losses.
Yeah,
or seven and five, you're really no better. You're lucky that you're where you are.
Or how about this? Go 7-5 and the only players you like, you know, felt like played well are gone.
Gone. Right.
You don't need that. Right. You need a foundation.
There needs to be, yes, a feeling, yes. The foundation has been built and just wait. You know,
yeah.
We are getting better. Not we will get better, but we are.
And doing it from comparatively speaking, I think in college basketball, since the rosters are so much smaller mm-hmm. and there's more D1 teams and all that, and you can – like there's no – like Auburn football couldn't go and say, well, we're going to go sign the kid from Lithuania. Like that's not going to help you like on this. But there's so much – it's like so much – you have a bigger scope of talent to pull from and you have a smaller roster. It can get very mercenary-like. It can mm-hmm. get very transactional. But look – at even in the portal era, Auburn's best team was built on the back of guys who had been there for multiple years. And so when you look at this team for Auburn basketball this year, they want this to be the foundation, right?
Right.
Not everybody's going to be back next year, but they want to be able to have some carryover. Football, it's easier to kind of pull off that continuity game because of the way the rosters are built, but the approach is still very similar. It's like it's hard to win with a bunch of mercenaries. It just is. Like I even think about like a team like Michigan that won the national championship. Yes, they got a couple pieces that were monsters for them, but they had several guys on that team that won it all that were there a year before that lost to Auburn in the Sweet 16. That's something I think you know goes overlooked, I think, a lot of times with people, that you want to have something that you built. And you want to have some continuity. You're not going to be able to bring everybody back. You might not be able to bring most people back year in and year out. But what you can do is have a culture and something that carries over year in and year out. And sometimes you need that personnel to overlap. And this is what this year is about. Finding who is going to be there with you moving forward. Take a Byron Brown and a Cole Best and, you know, Cody Sigler, a handful of guys where you're like, they're one and done. You know, Joe Simmons.
Chaz Nimrod.
You know they're one and done. You 100% know they're one and done. They're not going to do anything else. But take those guys to help you win and make winning a habit. Make it contagious. Set the tone.
And what's really good about a few of those guys is they have been with Alex Golish for multiple mm-hmm. years. They're not guys that are there just in for their first year. Some of them are, but others have
most
been.
Most of them not.
And you listen to Byron Brown and Cole Best and Cole Skinner talk about – you know, what they have come from and where they are now. And that helps sell, you know, to younger players sticking around and finding out what happens in a year or so, even if you're not the man right now. 334-321-1390, that's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and Tex is up first. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Justin. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Doing well.
Very good. Justin, I heard you on Sirius yesterday.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. You sounded like you were on a treadmill for a little while.
I had so much stuff going on around me outside, and I was burning alive. So, yes.
Oh, we're over the
Yeah, we're at the complex.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you did a great job.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Tex.
So, Bill, an analogy for you. What was Auburn baseball like between Hal Baird and Butch Thompson?
Not nearly as much fun as they are now. At times, it's not like they were completely without talent, but uh, I just don't think there was the direction and the obviously the continuity wasn't what you'd like. There were a few things that were missing.
So this football hire reminds me of when we finally hired Bush Thompson back as the head coach. Somebody that has been able to convince and get players to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that overrides the amount of talent you have.
Well, the sum can be better than the individual parts totaled together, you know?
That is correct. So I just thought about that as I was driving down the road listening to Justin yesterday, thinking, how this sounds more like a team that gets it, a team that gets each other in an era where it's not always, able to put that roster together.
No, you're right. I mean, and sometimes just going out and plucking the biggest names and the brightest stars doesn't always work either. A lot of times, all-star teams get beaten by teams that know each other better.
Yep. Well, there's a lot of I don't mean to compare it to Little League baseball, but there's a lot of really good teams in Little League baseball going home after the regionals.
Yeah, there are, and the Little League team that's representing this state's got some familiar names on it, don't they?
Yes, it does. From Phoenix City, of all.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah,
it's crazy. All right, I just want to share that with you, Justin. You did a fantastic job yesterday.
I appreciate that text. Thank you.
Well, and I appreciate. By the way, I met your future wife at the time with a good friend of hers,
mm-hmm.
The mayor of Pike Road.
Oh yeah,
back at a van. So, anyway, I appreciate what both of y'all do for Auburn sports. For somebody that's 6.5 hours away, it makes life a little bit easier. So, I appreciate you guys. You take care.
Good hearing from you, Tex.
Yeah, how about the Phoenix City? Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So cool to be right down the road. But then, obviously, like, the Rasmus daughter.
The last time they were there, it was Kobe and Corey.
Ripping.
She dominated.
Incredible. And like
she's throwing 73.
And it's so cool like watching it. And like, obviously you get like a little bit of that, hey, semi local kind of hometown, like, oh yeah, you're rooting for him and all that. It'd be really cool. I'd love to see him make a run. But I was getting a kick out of knowing what I was like, and what, more importantly, like my brothers and when we were 11 and 12. And if what's going through those kids' heads when they come up to the plate? Oh well, we're the state champion of such and such, and look at
this girl,
and this girl's gonna come here, and she threw a curveball on one of the strikeouts the other night. She threw a curveball, and it looked like that Bugs Bunny cartoon where that kid could have swung 9 times. Like it was just like you have no chance, and it's like really cool. And then like she hits the ball really well too. Yeah. It's a really really cool story for that. And somebody told me. Phoenix City, Phoenix City's got the best flag football team on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm. They have for the last couple
apparently,
of years.
Apparently, she is going to play both ways for them. It's just like we've got like the Bo Jackson of Little League sports right now going on. It's crazy. It's great. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. And yeah, good luck to them. Well, we'll get to our first break here in hour number two. I'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Plenty of time here on the Thursday Drive.
And
War Eagle.
With Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Justin, of course, from the Auburn Observer, and Drew is at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We talked a little while ago about a couple of the guys. Ferg, I'd love your thoughts as we, as we're into the the second week and about to go into the first scrimmage, and things could change, here obviously over the next few days, but just some guys who have caught your eye that maybe you didn't have at or near the top of the list heading into fall camp.
I would say
I would say Jacob Strand's got to be like high up there on the list. Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect from him at all.
And I thought him, and like we've heard Jack Lehrer's been a guy that could be in the mix to be like a sixth, seventh man for him this year. Yeah, I mean, that's a really impressive one to me because you didn't see anything from
him. And it's also really good to hear when you lose Ty Buster just before the start of camp.
Correct. Yeah, that's one for sure. I'll say, who else? I would say that, I wrote before camp started, I was like, here are the players I'm going to be keeping an eye on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, Omar and Deshaun Spencer and Darian Smith. And, it was guys that already were on my radar.
Those are guys that got a lot of buzz in the spring.
Yeah, and they're taking that step forward. Last couple of days, Buddy Mathis would probably be in there.
Yeah,
it's just
because
you just didn't really kind of know where you were going with him. He's been pretty impressive. All right, I picked this one. I got this guy down, too. How about one that I wasn't quite as high on some of these other ones, but it was like, hey, we'll see. Arlo Sportingham. And I wrote about him before camp and being like, if he's healthy, this was a dude when he was at Florida, he was very productive. I'm like, keep an eye on that. I'm interested to see where it goes.
And he's getting a lot of work with the ones.
I wrote today that I think the tight end situation for Auburn is 1A, 1B with him and with Jake Johnson. And I think guys like Jonathan Echols and Tree Newsome, when healthy, are going to be kind of like situational guys.
Echols has missed the last few days. Doesn't look like anything serious, but again,
be
careful. He hasn't been out there.
Right. Let's see. Who else comes to mind? This one's not he's going to start or maybe even be in the rotation. I'm really intrigued by how much Wayne Henry I've seen.
And heard
about. I wrote about it earlier this week. If you want to have
There's so many guys.
If you want to have six safeties back there this year, your top six, you could easily go, it's kind of like with wide receiver, where it's like it's easy to find five. And it's like, all right, well, you got Champ Anthony, and you got Sylvester Smith-Reed and Caleb Harris and New Boy Fagans and Eric Winters, and then who's that sixth guy? And more than likely, it's probably an older guy in that room, but it might be Wayne Henry. He's playing.
Isn't Fred Gaskins another guy Gaskins back there, too?
I would say Gaskins.
The
favorite.
A guy I haven't really.
Jacoby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a guy.
And he had a good spring.
In the spring, I thought, we're seeing what we used to hear about him a couple of years ago.
You've heard more about Gaskin. Maybe Gaskin ends up being that guy for me, where it's just like, okay, right? He might be that. That sixth safety back there, fifth or sixth safety.
Wayne Henry
was good. And he was a guy that yesterday Jacob Bronowski talked about, is really carving a spot out on special teams, love that.
And he loved scrap, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And look, it's easy not to – if he has the right head on his shoulders, which it sounds like he does, Scrap Richards was one of those guys where, he went to Notre Dame as a wide receiver because it was like, this dude's a freak athlete. Just go find something. Didn't work out for him there to be instant impact. And then in this cornerback room, there's just guys who are ahead of him right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's super fast and he's physical and he's got a good mindset, you need players like that because that's where things get fun. We talk about this team being a deeper team. One of the big side effects of that people don't talk about as much is that if you have deep rotations, especially defensive back, the guys who are beyond that, who on a lot of teams might be in the mix to be in the rotation. You might not need them to play for you on defense now,
they
but boy.
They could be terrors on special teams.
Right. And so
it's great to have extra DBs, linebackers, running backs.
Running backs. You got two running backs in Tay Meadows and Alvin Henderson, who I don't think are going to be in that top four more than likely this year. But if they're finding ways to get active on special teams, that's a good spot to be in. And I'll give full credit, and we'll see how it all plays out for him this year. I'll give full credit to a guy like Alvin Henderson.
Absolutely.
This kid broke every record you could imagine did at Elba, and it was always going to be a big jump. I grew up 20 minutes from Elba. I know exactly what kind of competition he was facing at Elba, and he was awesome. But it's different making that jump to the SEC, and he's in a room that is very loaded room. But if you're that guy who was a really big recruit and was a record breaker, awesome high school player, you didn't play in your first year, you stay around for that second year, and doesn't look like you're going to be a key part of your plans on offense, and it's like,
well, he's busting his tail on special teams. It's like, man, full credit to that. Like, that's
absolutely,
that's a story you don't hear very often these days.
No, you're right. I mean, that's one that these days with the situation you have, you know, wouldn't be surprised at all to just not hear anything about him. And the next thing you know, he's announcing he's going to go into the portal.
But let me tell you, knowing Alvin and knowing his family and knowing those like where he came from and like the people around him, like, doesn't surprise me. Like, doesn't surprise me at all. Like, you got to have that right head on your shoulders. Scrap Richardson's kind of the same way, where it's just like, big name recruit. Whoa, last year didn't work out for me. I go to a new school, get a new start, or, you know, a new opportunity. Well, there's more guys ahead of me right now. Well, I get an opportunity on special teams. I can go impact play. I can go help win a game without necessarily being one of the top guys. You got to have dudes like that. And so full credit to some of these young guys that were really talented recruits coming out of high school. And it's like, it's not your time yet, but can you find a way to impact right now? Bryce Kane. How about Bryce Kane?
Oh, yeah.
Bryce Kane's further back in this offense right now. A guy like Deshaun Spencer, I think, is further ahead of him on in the slot. I think Christian Neptune's the one of those guys, too. Mm-hmm. I think Nimrod's going to be able to play some slot. So it's going to be harder naturally to find a guy like room for Bryce Kane. But if Bryce Kane can find value in being a return man or helping you out in special teams, again, you don't have to –
return man or a gunner. I mean, you know.
I really like his potential as a punt returner. And I know Neptune's a guy that was mentioned first with that. I know Spencer's another guy that was mentioned. Like, so those slot receivers. But, like, I love the idea –
Hey, but if it's – I love the idea of not having to use your starter if you don't have to, if you've got a good enough guy.
Yeah. Now, they're going to use Rayshon Pleasant at kick returner.
Oh,
because
no kidding.
Why not?
Because he is the best.
Yeah. But I love the idea of a guy like Bryce Kane with that straight line speed that he has. And you know he's got good hands. It's just catch it, stick your foot in the ground, go, and just make that cut. And, like, that there's a lot of potential in that. So find a way to help this team out. And we do know – Alex Gulch puts a lot of emphasis on his special teams. They're very aggressive. Like, you're going to see fakes. You're going to see crazy stuff happen on special teams. You're going to see them be aggressive with the way they want to win the field position battle. And then on top of that, Jacob Bronowski, during his time at Miami of Ohio and Pitt, I mean, they had elite units there. And so it's like they take this really, really seriously. So shout out to those younger guys. And Tay Meadows, an older guy in the room, where it's just like, yep, might not be one of the top running backs on this team, might not be one of the top guys in my position, but I'm gonna find a way to get on the field and make an impact. So it's cool to hear Bronowski like mention those guys specifically, because you could easily just say, you know what, I'm not playing this year, I'm gonna pack it up and I'm just gonna, you know, this season's a wash, and already get down on you and just kind of go through the motions. But those guys haven't done it.
No, and part of that I think is credit to Alex Gulish and his staff in, you know, the ability to get guys to buy in. I mean, I think when you're assembling a team, you want as much talent as you possibly can have, but you also want guys. You hear fit, you hear culture. A lot of people just go, yeah, those are words. But no, I mean, this team, I see it every day, and you do too. They are, I mean, they're really bought in. This is a team that is, they're competing every day in practice as well or more than any team I can recall watching in fall practice. I mean, they're really getting after it, and that's real competition, and that's how they're gonna get better. But I think that's also how you are able to you know, try to build that retention, you know, get those players to realize that if they do this, they may have an opportunity to get even more at someplace else, but their opportunity may come here and gives you a better chance of retaining those guys. Mm-hmm. Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. We've got about a half an hour to go. Plenty of time for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Got about 20 minutes left here on the Thursday edition, and let's head back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. You're going to have to catch me up. I caught the Alabama-Florida Little League World Series game, I guess, earlier this week or this weekend, and they won, and I think they were supposed to play again on Tuesday, and you guys were talking about it. Does the Phoenix City team have a female pitcher? Is that
oh,
what
yes.
Saying?
Yes, and is it Corey or Colby's?
It's Corey's daughter
and Colby's
niece.
Niece.
Yeah, so the Rasmus. Yeah. Yeah,
they're coaching.
Yes.
Corey is the head coach.
Yeah.
And Colby's his assistant.
Yeah, and so Corey's daughter is like –
phenomenal,
an incredible athlete. Like just like two-way, like elite at batting. She was, you know, what was it the other night in the championship game? She struck out 8 and gave up 3 hits, no walks in a complete game shutout. So yeah, really impressive.
Okay, so and because I mean I looked up the bracket and everything, and I believe the team representing Georgia was right across the river in Columbus.
Yes, Columbus usually, yeah, Columbus had their team. Yeah, can't remember which one it was.
So
yeah, so because
they ended up.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say because I believe. All right, so Kobe's son is also on the team. So you have Rasmus Cousins this time on the team for the first time that they're back in the Little League World Series for the first time since the brothers were back in '99.
Okay, all right. So Phenix City, Alabama is going to represent, I guess, the Southeast.
Yes.
And Williamsport.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Cool. So now who do they beat in the championship game? Was that Tuesday?
Yeah, that's right. It was the night before last or day before yesterday. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, great. Oh, wow. Did not realize that. Okay. Anyway. Now Bill, I know you went to the soccer match that we had Jordan Hare, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you partook in this, but I got an email about you could get a picture with part of the net with Messi's penalty kick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, I didn't get that.
I got mine today.
Huh? I must have missed that.
Yeah. Well, there was only 200 of them.
Oh, okay. And, well, no, I don't recall that. I guess I missed that email. I usually get you know, whenever they have something, I usually get that, but I didn't see that one.
Okay. Well, it's a great frame.
Yeah, that's great.
Like I said, yeah, it's got part of the it actually inside the frame is part of the net, the goalie or the goal net,
mm-hmm,
from where he scored. And I actually got pictures of it on my phone from inside the stadium,
right,
actually with the ball in the air.
Oh, that's cool.
From the upper deck. But yeah, got that today. Like I said, number 103. And I was telling my wife that you know, whoever probably got number 10 of 200, since that's Messi's number, that one will probably be worth a little bit more than the other one. But just because of that, because I bought some memorabilia stuff, like some Dale Earnhardt stuff, and if there was like a 3 in it, which, mm-hmm, which his number was kind of special, you know, depending on how many they produced and everything. But got that today. Got to figure out where I'm going to hang it. But great experience, and love it. So go Phenix City. Hey, do you know when they start up in Williamsport and who they're playing?
I don't know yet because they're still going through regionals elsewhere right now, so okay. I'm not sure yet. It'll probably be a week or so.
Okay. Bye, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Mitch.
I was looking at it. They beat a team from Tennessee to win it.
That's right. It was.
And if you look at the bracket, the Phenix City team went 4-0. Everybody else obviously took 2 losses. But, like, the Tennessee team, they had to come out of the loser's bracket. Like, This they dominated.
Mm-hmm.
They dominated. I think maybe the closest anybody came to beating them was within 3 or 4 runs. So really, really cool. Be a good opportunity. I mean, that Phenix City team with the Rasmus boys were what? That they went to the championship game, didn't they? Like the U.S.
They lost.
They went to the U.S. title, mm-hmm, game. So very, very cool stuff. I'm hoping this crew can go far. That's like really, really fun to see. There was a kid the other night. We were talking about this earlier. I don't know where he was from. I don't know where he was playing. 12 years old. He was hitting. He's 6'2", 180.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, some of the size of some of these kids.
And they put up a graphic of being like, hey, here are famous baseball players who were 6'2", 180. And so, like, as a comparison. And the one that blew my mind was that kid standing at the plate was Barry Larkin's size. Like, what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, he's
like,
12.
And he's 12. Yeah, and he hit a homer where it was like he looked like he just broke his wrist. He just went like boop, and just flew out. Like, crazy.
Well, I mean, the thing is crazy is there aren't more you know, little league superstars that turn into major league stars.
Yeah. There are a few, but not very many. So Cody Bellinger was like a pretty big one of those.
What was Todd Frazier?
Todd Frazier, yeah. Todd Frazier was one. Obviously, you know, you've had like the Rasmuses and like one of the young guys. One of the young guys now. I want to say, and again, not like a superstar, but like I want to say like Bryce Matthews, like for the Astros is one. Like mm-hmm. I think there's a few of those like that are pretty cool. They were talking about, by the way, just while we're on a baseball kick. So last night I was watching the Braves game. Last night was Javi Lopez bobblehead night at Truist, and they had Javi come in and like talk, you know, with the commentary team in one of the innings. And Javi told a story because they were talking about Bobby Cox, you know, passing away this year and being his manager. Javi told a story that when he was growing up in Puerto Rico, that he met Bobby Cox when he was 10 playing Little League.
Hmm.
And that in Puerto Rico, his team was really, really good in Puerto Rico that he played on, the like all-star team he played on, that they had got – that there were so many players that had gotten such a buzz – on that team about being really impressive that like there were MLB scouts who were already just looking at him and just like
right.
knowing who these kids are, kind of getting a face for him. And so Javi told the story that he met Bobby Cox when he was 10, and it was like talking about how cool it was about, you know, hey, it's a major league manager, and it's like, you know, all that, and how cool it was. Fast forward a decade plus later, and he's playing for Bobby with the Braves, and it's like really cool stories like that. And he's like, I had never really told that story until like he passed away because people didn't know that about me. And he's like, yeah, it's just like
that's really
sometimes
cool.
Like small work kind of stuff. But yeah. I love the thought of like your Little League team was so cool, like your Little League team was so awesome that like MLB personnel were like, hey, we just need to know who these kids are.
Like, well, I mean, like a Hall of Fame manager noticed you when you were 10.
Yeah. That's so crazy. It's like it's awesome.
I was going to say that it's funny. Javi was the favorite player when I was in Montgomery doing a show with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
One of our sponsors was a hair place, okay. A salon,
uh-huh.
And the lady who ran the salon was the biggest Javi Lopez fan
in
the world.
Every southern woman of that era.
She loved Javi, and she went to as many Braves games as she could and sat behind home plate.
Yep.
She was just as happy to watch him there from from behind the plate.
There you go. They were making a joke.
He's a heck of a player too.
They were making a joke about it last night. So that bobblehead that they have that they were doing, it's like him like behind the plate, and the mask. The mask was removable on it. Like you could
cool.
Flip the mask up. And Brandon Gaudin made a joke. He was like, yeah. And it's like all the female fans who grew up loving Javi Lopez are probably good that his bobblehead can actually show his face. Like, they did a good job with it. Like it looks sometimes those bobbleheads can be a hit or miss. They did a really good job. That looked like Javi Lopez. So, but yeah, it was really cool last night where he was just like telling the story. Yep. I met Bobby Cox when I was 10 years old and then ended up playing for him. And I was just like, that is like the smallest of small worlds. But you hear that, and I know Puerto Rico is a little bit different, you know, but you know, because of their ties to America, but like, the whole thing right now with in baseball with international scouting and all that and like wanting to have a draft and all that, but I just reminded of when Acuna broke out as a prospect for the Braves. It was like all those international scouts went back to his like the village he grew up in, Venezuela, and were like, any of your relatives, we will sign them right now. And his youngest brother is like this like phenom, like talent the Phillies got. Like he's like a 6'3" shortstop. Like Luis Angel is man, the White Sox are like, White Sox might be the best team in the AL. Like it's crazy.
They have turned, it's funny. The White Sox and the Orioles have like just done 180s.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like was it 2 years ago the White Sox had like the worst record?
Yeah,
ever?
They were terrible. Yeah. They were terrible.
Fun stuff. And I hope that's a good, you know, I remember, you know, and I was, 12? Yeah, I went at, like, the 05 run that they had. I loved that team, like, even though as a Braves fan, like, I loved watching that
team. Well, it's okay for you to, you know, have an American
League. Oh, yeah, and they were, like, I found, like, I liked the 04 Red Sox. Like, there were some AL teams that I thought were really fun, and I liked watching them. But, like, I don't know. It's just they've been so bad
for a while that, like, I think it's cool when the White Sox are good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a
fun. It
just
felt like it was out of nowhere.
Like, to me, it's like we were talking about the Brewers earlier, and, like, in my lifetime, the Brewers have never been awesome. Like, this is probably the best the Brewers have been in my lifetime.
Yeah, they're a great small market.
Right. And it's like, to me, it's like, okay, if the Brewers are awesome, it's kind of like when the Rays are awesome. It's like, yeah, it's kind of random, but okay, cool, whatever. It's like White Sox, though, it just kind of feels right. Like, for an American, like, if you had to pick an American, Tigers, like, when the Tigers are good, mm-hmm. it's so fun. There's a few of those teams like that. Then there's some teams where I'm just like, it doesn't even register with me if you're ever – like, I remember those Angels teams that were really good. And I was just like –
they were never good enough, though.
I was just like – I was really odd. Like, the Mike Socha teams, like, really odd that they were – Vladdy, like, you know.
But they ought to be. You would think. They've got the resources to be a whole lot
100%, better. Yeah. And then, like, you know, it hurts my feelings to see how bad off the A's are right now because it's like – that would be a fun, like, obviously I did not grow up in an era where the A's were awesome, like, mm-hmm. like 70s, 80s, yeah, like, yeah, awesome teams, but, like, you know, those Moneyball teams are fun, and now they are a shell of who they are now, and it's pretty sad.
Yeah, all they do is try to produce a player or two that they trade for, not as much as his worth.
So. Just keep going down that line forever. But on top of that, and the inverse of that to me is, like, I would love to see the Rockies be good again. Because that one Rocktober run was fun.
Well, I
don't
feel like that's happening anytime soon.
Nope. And it's so funny because I was reading something about it the other day, and it's like they're so bad. They're worst team in baseball again this year. And it's like middle of the pack in attendance because everyone just loves hanging out at Coors Field. And it's like they have – if they could just be in the mix again, they would have a whole lot going for them.
Can they ever have a just – mediocre pitching staff.
Yeah, and it's like you're never going to get a free agent to come there unless they just have no other options. And it's like I think they hit that point where they kept drafting like really good like arms in the first round, and then you get to it and you're like, well, now we have no hitters, and it's a real tough spot when you don't have any hitters.
Yeah, it's a whole lot more fun to watch your team lose 20-18 than it is, you know, 7-2,
it's like
seven to one.
They
every
draft
time
the kid
out.
From Tennessee, a Dollinger. Yeah, they drafted a couple of those guys, and they come up and they're like, well, we finally got these first round pitchers in, and it's like, okay, well,
and the ball still doesn't move. So I mean,
it's like, and now we don't have any run support. Oh no! And the other teams are coming in here and like, oh, we're pitching well. We're only giving up 5 or 6 runs, but like we're not hitting. Like it's a crime. Like their best players, they outside of Goodman, who's good.
Oh,
grief,
he is.
It's
He's
incredible.
Really good.
But like Tovar and the center fielder Doyle, where it was just like
it's these awesome
prospects they came up with. It's like, man, these are going to be the futures of our franchise.
And then
they can't hit.
All of a sudden they can't. I mean, they were good.
He's like, you can't hit it. Coors, man. Come on, what's up with that?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Yeah, I would love to see them be good again, though. But you're right. It may be a long time before that happens.
They've tried everything. Humidifiers.
They have tried everything.
Humidors. I'm sorry. So yeah, it just hadn't worked.
Sinker ballers.
Yep.
They went away from sinker balls and just said, we just need strikeout guys. And it's
try to make the stadium, make it tougher to hit home runs. It just produces more triples. So, I mean, you just never know.
Huge.
Yeah.
At least those guys can play defense.
Yeah. Well, need to be able to do something. We've got just a few minutes left in the show, so we better get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell
Do It ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer again. Tomorrow, first scrimmage. What positions do you think are the most critical that you'll want to know about from Alex Golish tomorrow?
I think it's the line of scrimmage. I think it's who's standing out at those guard spots, fighting it out. who's making an impact in an interior defensive line. You know, the edge rushers too, kind of behind the
yeah. I do want to know sort of the order. Joe Phillips wasn't out there today, right?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't out there. It's just going to be very interesting to see kind of who shakes out there, because I feel pretty good about the rotation at linebacker and at corner and at safety right now. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a little bit of wiggle room. Same thing with like wide receiver, running back, tight end, all that.
The lines are
the intrigue one.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm not as concerned about the D line. I think Vontrell feels like he's got a half dozen and wants even more if he can to get out there and play.
Did
those
you
two
happen
spots.
To hear the Dallas Walker tidbit today?
I listened to a little of him.
Dallas Walker told us today that he has lost 30 pounds since the Iron Bowl last year. He was at 365.
Yeah, Vontrell said he'd lost 30.
And he's down to 335.
He's still a large human being.
Yeah. 335 is still big no matter how you slice it. But he's down to 335, and I asked him, do you feel that? He said, yeah. He said, I'm running in some third down rabbits packages right now. Like, I feel like I can move out there and, like, hold up. And it's like, that's pretty impressive because he's – You know,
he was a run stopper that you didn't expect to see on third down, you know, third and long.
But if you remember last season, it would get to like he'd get in those early downs, and there'd be some times where it's like, oh, he just got in the backfield,
yeah.
He's in that quarterback's face, so he's a pretty impressive one. And then like, you know, Darian Smith continues to be, you know, pretty impressive. He's obviously a really good pass rusher. Heard a lot about him these last couple of days of guys being like, yeah, he's doing really well and trying to be more of an every down
talking
guy.
About, but yeah, playing first and second down.
Bulking him up a little bit and being because, you know, he definitely – and I think that's the thing here is the comparison with him is like he is obviously a different type of defensive tackle, you know, and he's in a class with Malik Autry, who's as big as a house, and Jordan Crawford, who is not as tall but is also as big as a house. And like it changes something about you. And he's just a unique player, and real interested to see just kind of like who separates themselves or kind of how that pecking order looks like. You feel like Dallas will be your starting nose tackle, and you'll feel like a healthy Cody Sigler is going to be one of your top defense tackles. But I think there's going to be a lot of room for a lot of other guys to get involved.
All right, I knew the music was about to play, so
time it
go
up.
Ahead. Yeah, again, let folks know about the Observer, and I'm sure plenty of info tomorrow after the scrimmage.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. If you want our newsletters the last couple of days where we break down everything we have seen and heard from Auburn football practice, you can check that out there. We got a podcast out this morning. We will have a wrap-up from the scrimmage tomorrow as well. So a ton of stuff on Auburn fall camp at the Observer right now. Sign up. And everything gets sent directly to your email inbox.
And here's something else, folks. I mean, you can go back and if you do go ahead and sign up, you can catch up on everything else that Justin's been writing.
Once you're in, you're in.
Yep. Ferg, great, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap things up for the Thursday drive. Don Dunn in tomorrow. Looking forward to spending some time with the coach. And hope you'll join us as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.